Hello and welcome to episode 21 of Meenal's World. Thank you all for tuning in last week. The response I received has been so overwhelming, and I cannot believe so many women reached out to me sharing their own struggles and stories. And it just goes to show how it really takes one person to start a conversation. And it's just all about creating that domino effect, that if you create one change in someone or even just spark a thought process, how it can just sort of create this chain where they go into someone else and they go into someone else. And I'm really, really proud that I spoke about how I felt, and it allowed women to come up and speak for themselves as well. And this week I have Dr. Poonam, who joins me, and she inspired me to open up about my postpartum journey. I started following her quite early on in the pandemic, and it was at a time where I thought I could just get on with the next next few months ahead of me in terms of my third trimester and my fourth trimester, or my postpartum journey. But it was only when I saw her stories I realized, well, she's also given birth. She's having good days and she's having bad days. And she really showed a true reflection of what being a mother is like, especially in a pandemic. She was so honest, not just about her good days, but also her bad days. And if it wasn't for her, I think when I had my bad days, I probably would have spiraled into a really, really difficult black hole. But I knew it was normal only because people like Dr. Poonam mentioned it on social media, that actually some days are quite shit and, you know, the next day will be better, and you just have to get on with it. And Dr. Poonam has been quite open about her own postpartum journey with her firstborn, and how she struggled with postpartum depression. And even now she talks about post-traumatic stress disorder. And to hear her story of her delivery with her firstborn, and to hear how it not only affected her but affected her husband as well, really shook me, because what Dr. Poonam went through, and then she still tried to put on a brave face. I mean, I can't imagine doing that myself. I can't imagine how many other women are going through the same thing as well. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and I hope it gives you a good insight into what it can be like for some women. I gave you my story last week, and this is Dr. Poonam's story. I hope you enjoy the show. So thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Poonam. I know you're very busy with two kids and a dog as well, and a husband. So that makes it like four kids at home. But thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on.
But you know, Dr. Poonam, I was just, as I just said to you before I hit record, I started following you, I think it was during the pandemic. Someone said to me that you should follow this Instagram because it's a reflection of what you're going through as well. You were pregnant at the time and you were working as a doctor, and you were afraid for your safety, the safety of your unborn child, your child at home and your family. And you went through a lot and you were very vocal about it. And that gave me a lot of encouragement and inspiration, because I was like, well, I'm not alone. So what gave you the thought that to say, okay, I need to share this?
Yeah. So actually this was my second baby. I had my son 7 years ago. And at the time when I had him, I actually went through really quite severe birth trauma. And the aftermath of that left me, like, I was in a very critical state in intensive care with multiple organ failure. It was a real touch and go situation. And the recovery of that left me with many sort of physical complications, but also actually probably the most overwhelming sort of darkness of my life was I suffered really badly from postnatal depression after that. And I think just that kind of journey into being vulnerable for the very first time, being a patient on the other side, and this whole new transition into motherhood, something that I thought would come so easily, but actually was met with so many challenges that the healing of that took a very, very long time, and took a lot of sort of measures, lots of interventions, lots of life transformations, actually, that then molded me into the kind of physician that I sort of became later. Over the last 7 years, we were told because of what happened, we couldn't have any more children. And I think in some way that I had just kind of left that episode in the past and that it was a very traumatic time, but we moved on. And then last year I found myself sort of pregnant, and my little rainbow baby, as I now call her. But the whole thing came as a big surprise, and it was actually in my first antenatal appointment that I was sat in front of the midwife, and she mentioned the word birth, and I had my first ever encounter of a panic attack. And, you know, I manage this day to day, and over the last few years, the one thing that has happened is I've become extremely passionate and sort of empathetic towards women in particular, mums of, like, you know, because I think that journey into motherhood has been quite a difficult one for the majority of mums, but actually things like birth trauma are rarely spoken about. So I'd already been doing a lot of work with my own patients, but suddenly again, there I was.
On the other side again, of the table.
She mentioned, and she mentioned the word birth, and I had a full-on panic attack. And actually that was the beginning of me discovering that I hadn't really dealt properly with the trauma that I had in the past. So, in fact, what I'd done was I'd buried it.
Sorry, Dr. Minima, I just want to ask, just because, you know, as a doctor, I want to ask you, what actually happened during the delivery of your firstborn? Why did you end up with these complications? What actually happened?
Yeah, it was actually such a freak occurrence. I had a very happy, really healthy pregnancy, and just after he was born, it was a forceps delivery, and I ended up with a really severe postpartum bleed afterwards. So I'd sort of within seconds kind of lost about 60-70% of my blood volume. So they rushed me to theatre, but we're struggling to really contain that. And then during the process of trying to resuscitate me, I ended up with a big anaphylaxis to the blood products. But then that ended up in sort of heart failure, liver failure, lung failure. So I was really, really ill.
Wow.
And then I had sepsis, which then took me sort of for a week. I was in intensive care. So I think that again was just a realization, although that, you know, my job involves dealing with life and death every day. As a GP, I absolutely love my job because I get to be part of the continuity and the continuation of the life cycle with people from birth to death. We hold their hand. We, you know, it's beautiful. But then suddenly you find that actually life is very unpredictable and health is very unpredictable. And I think for me, it was the first time a proper realization that, yes, at any time anything can happen and your health is actually, you know, as cliche as it sounds, your health is your wealth. But it was a very traumatic time and one that nobody could have predicted. But the more I delved into it, the more I looked into it, you know, every year over 30,000 women in the UK alone face really severe traumatic births. And we never hear about these stories. We always hear the positive birth stories, and it's expected. Society thinks that you go in, you have your baby, you come out and you get on with it.
Well, that's actually the thing, Dr. Poonam. You made a very good point there. Sorry to interrupt again. But you mentioned that you actually went through something traumatic and that had a mental impact on you. But with the same token, women have normal deliveries. They have normal pregnancies. Yeah. Baby is healthy. The mother is healthy, but they still have postnatal depression.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I feel like we need to really emphasize on, because, and this is the first time I'm speaking about it, Dr. Poonam. I haven't even spoken to my family about it. I've spoken to my husband just a little bit about it, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to talk to Dr. Poonam today. I'm really just going to be honest, because I think it's really important. Because if we're going to be advocates for women to speak up, we have to do it ourselves, right?
Definitely.
So I had a very healthy delivery. I had a C-section. I did get gestational diabetes right at the very end, and I was on metformin and it was fine. It was well controlled, no problems. Delivery was fine. Recovery has been almost, you could say, perfect. I can move around. I'm very healthy. I can go for long walks. I'm okay. But this transition from not having a baby to having a baby has been very overwhelming, and I'm very good with kids. So put me in as a nursery teacher, I'll do great, I'll be fine. But when it's my own, it's a whole different thing. And I saw one of your posts, Dr. Poonam, where you mentioned that there are some countries that use sleep deprivation as torture. And that's when it clicked. I was like, Meenal, that's why you feel so crap. Because you haven't slept.
Absolutely.
You haven't slept in 6 weeks. Well, you have. I have, but broken sleep. And then hearing those cries of the baby, and trying to juggle your own life, and then also trying to put on a facade of I'm okay.
Yeah.
And there's a veneer of things are fine, I'm okay, I'm really happy with this baby, which I am. But then deep down, I have to say, I am struggling mentally.
Yeah.
It's a constant mental battle. And every day I'm just telling myself, just get through to the next day, tomorrow you'll be okay. And to be honest, I'm tired of thinking like that. And I don't have to. Mm. And I think that's the important thing. That's what, when the realization hit me that I don't have to feel this way because there are measures I can take to help me. And you do speak about it. And I can imagine 7 years ago, I don't think it was as, you know, a topic that people really spoke about as much as they are now.
Yeah, it's interesting because at the very beginning, just before we started recording, you said, you know, it's great that you're so brave that you're talking about it just now. You know, and the only thing I wish is that I wish I'd spoken about it earlier. And if I hadn't gone through this experience, I probably wouldn't have realized just how dark that past was. And I guess it's like I felt so alone when I had my son, because even though I was surrounded by my family, every time the health visitor came in, I felt that I just wanted to put on this front that everything's fine, like I'm coping, I'm a doctor, you know, this is natural. I speak to people all the time, they're absolutely fine. But what I realized was that I'd never really asked a mother postnatally, how are you?
Mm.
We focus so much on the baby comes in 6 weeks and we examine the baby and we're like, okay, right, mum, like contraception check, okay, your wound is okay, check, okay, right, bye, you know? So I think that experience over the last 7 years got me that I'd actually then started doing more and more women's health things, and I started doing, like, I do all the baby checks and the postnatal clinics in my practice. And every mum that I spoke to, I was like, I just wanted to connect and know that I wouldn't ever say to them, but I'd be like, am I the only mum that's finding it so hard?
Mm.
And I would ask them, I'd say, how are you? And they'd be like, oh, I'm fine. I'd be like, no, but really, how are you? It's, you know, the first 6 weeks and how has it been? And I kid you not, 9 times out of 10, mums would break down. And I'd have to say to them, look, this isn't, you telling me how you're feeling doesn't mean I'm going to take your baby away. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. It doesn't mean you need an antidepressant right now. This is normal. This fourth trimester that is very unspoken about, which is a transition of those first 12 weeks after the birth of your baby. It is so difficult because you are not just sleep deprived. You're responsible for a little human being, solely responsible. That's scary.
Mm.
Being responsible for yourself is bad enough, but being responsible for a child who doesn't speak, doesn't communicate, you don't know their needs yet, they just want you all the time, you have this loss of identity. It is a really exhausting, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It's a very big transition, yet we don't speak about it. And we worry that if we do speak about it, we will get judged. We will get judged as being labelled with depression, and they will think that we are less of a mother. But actually, I have just become so much of an advocate for wanting to normalise this phase that we go through. Mm. And now I'm going through it just now. My baby is now 5 months old. And there are so many days where I use terrible words, you know, I call myself a failure. I have guilt. Guilt is the word of the moment. I am always guilty. I don't know why, but I'm always feeling guilty for some reason or another, you know, because this mom guilt exists. But it is this transition of having to constantly remind yourself of, like, I am worthy. I am good enough. I am doing my best. I am not.
And there's this, like, there's this voice in your head that sort of overpowers anything else sometimes. Yeah. You hit this really low point. And what happened to me was, when I gave birth to Radhika, it was a big deal because I protested outside Downing Street in April. So I was like, yeah, I'm protesting for doctors. I'm a strong woman. I can face anything. And that was true at the time. I had this fire inside me to protect, you know, all doctors and healthcare workers. I felt very passionate about it. And I protested and I was doing all of these things. And I still have that fire and passion inside me. But then when I started feeling these feelings, I thought, but then people might disconnect that narrative of me from their heads. They might think, well, Meenal maybe is not as brave as she comes out to be, or maybe Meenal's not that strong woman. But
definitely,
I decided one day when my husband came back from work, so my husband's training to be GP as well, he came back from practice and he said to me, like, how was your day? Like, it's a very normal question. And I just burst into tears. And then he said to me, Meenal, this is not normal. Like, you shouldn't just burst into tears if I ask you, how was your day? There's clearly something wrong. So I decided to call the health visitor at that time. And what actually happened, Dr. Poonam, was when she was asking me questions and I was too afraid to give the right answer. And it's because of what you just said. What if someone takes my baby away? What if someone thinks I'm not adequate to be a mother?
Yeah.
So I was very afraid. And before she went through the, so what she did was she went through a questionnaire sort of thing to ask me, like, to see how I was feeling so she could put me on a diagnosis or, you know, have an idea of what's going on. And when she was asking me the questions, I said, look, just hold on. Let's start from the beginning. But this time I'll be honest, but please just reassure me that this stays between us or nothing's going to happen, because I was terrified. And she went through the questionnaire with me and she said, look, from what I can hear, it doesn't seem like you need medication. She said, it looks like you've got, you know, some sort of mild to moderate depression, which is very normal. Mm-hmm. And these are the measures that you can use to take place. And I think hearing that word depression sort of put a sinking feeling in my heart, because that's not a word you want to be associated with. You don't want to be depressed. You want to be full of energy. You want to be happy because you're a mother. Everyone wants a cute little baby in their arms. So when she said that word to me and she said, quite likely that you've got depression, that's when it hit me. And I said, okay, I have to accept it. And now let's try and move forward. But I know a lot of women don't make that first phone call. That's the thing.
And I think that it's very variable as well. You know, I will absolutely put my hand up. The first time with my son, the health minister would come around and I would clean the house down. I would have everything looking perfect. I'd be sitting there with my makeup and my outfit on. She'd come in and say, yeah, everything's brilliant. Everything's fine. Because at that point, what I didn't have was I didn't have the insight and experience of what motherhood journey is like. I was a first time mum. I was terrified of everything. I was terrified of my baby, but I was too scared to admit that because I was ill. He wasn't very well. And every time I spoke about him to my GP or to the health visitor, they were just like, oh, you're just anxious because of what happened. And yes, I was anxious because of what happened, but I also knew there was something not right with him.
Mm.
But then it got to a point where I started thinking, everyone thinks I'm crazy. Like, they think I'm just mad. There's something, you know, maybe there is something wrong with me. And I just, this internal dialogue that I had built up inside me that was kind of pushing everybody away from me because I was worried about what if this happens? What if they take my baby away? And I think actually in our culture, we're both Indian, in our culture also mental health is something that's definitely not spoken about enough. And we have this kind of culture which does just expect women to get up and get on with it. You know, this is part of life. And I found it very difficult to speak to anyone that I felt I could really connect with until one day I spoke to my mum. And I said, I'm really struggling with feeding him. I'm really struggling with this. And she was like, you know, I had all of that too. And then I spoke to my aunt and she had all of it too. And over time, actually, the more and more mums I spoke to, I was like, this is just such a normal thing. And actually, if you take a completely fit, well, normal functioning human being and you put them into the situation where they've gone through, you know, whether it's been major surgery to have a baby or whether they have just had to, you know, push out another life where they've got hormones all over the place, they've had tears of some description, they're having to stay awake pretty much 18 hours a day, they're having to, you know, compromise their own healthcare needs every minute. They have no time for self-care. You know, that person, if you then did that questionnaire on them a few weeks later, they would be probably fitting the diagnosis of depression. Mm. And actually, I think we're very quick to put this kind of label on mums when actually the transition is it's very, very normal. And actually saying to mums, it's okay if you're feeling like this right now, what can I do to support you? Because there's a lot of things actually that mums need. And during that time, really it's a lot about support. It's about the little basic small things that make a big difference. And I think when we label people with a mental health condition, it almost isolates and alienates them.
But so, you know, Dr. Poonam, I want to ask you, and I'm saying this only because if someone's listening in, maybe they can sort of understand how real this issue is. Because I also feel that to some extent, depression is a word that's thrown around quite a lot. She's just depressed, or she's just got mental health issues, but it's so much more than that. So I want to ask you, if it's okay with you, if you could describe what a bad day would look like for you.
When I had postnatal depression?
Yeah.
So this is like, okay, so 7 years ago, putting myself into, so put it this way, actually, I might just reframe it. So this time around, I've been very fortunate in ways because I had the experience of what postnatal depression looks like. I was giving birth in a pandemic, so I knew that I had no help coming in. So I had to be extra conscious of my mental health. And I have found this time around, I've not suffered from anything like postnatal depression, thank goodness. But I find myself asking my husband so many times every day, because I spend hours sometimes. Sometimes hours go by and I've just been looking at my baby in absolute wonder, awe, amazement, thinking, oh my God, I can't believe I gave birth to you. I notice little things like her hands. I notice little things like her feet and the toenails. I love feeding her. And I say to my husband, my goodness, was Irish like this? Was it like this with him? Because, and he's like, I wish you noticed these things in him when we were at that stage with him. So point being, at that time, it was so dark that I have no memory of his first year of life. I see photos and I feel there's no connection there. If I had to spend a day alone with him, I would be crying. I would be terrified. I wouldn't know what to do with him. I felt really helpless and hopeless all the time. And I guess that postnatal depression, there is such a spectrum from, we could talk about the baby blues in those first 2 weeks, where there is a natural expectation of just feeling a little bit anxious, that your mood is all over the place, you feel very tearful. And then often, whether it's with milk coming in or whether it's just, you know, the hormones settling down, that tends to settle. But beyond that, then if conditions like you're feeling very sad all the time, that you're finding that you're crying most of the time, you have very little energy, you do not feel connected to your baby, that you feel like a failure or hopeless all the time. Sometimes even really dark thoughts can happen whereby you feel that there is no point in you being there, that that perhaps maybe even harmful ideas towards your baby. That is like real, that is like depression that we need to kind of really know about those symptoms and intervene, because sadly maternal suicide rates are high. You know, we do postnatal depression affects, and statistically 1 in 10 women, but you know, as a GP, I see it way more than that. And it's about recognizing what is like normal, which is having feelings every day of feeling, you know, tired or exhausted or feeling like you're tearful all the time. And that is all within normal fluctuations. But if more times than not you are feeling overwhelmingly negative and not being able to celebrate or enjoy your baby, then that is times where you really know that that's a bad day. That's a bad time. That's a bad phase that you need help.
And at what point did all this change for you with Irish? Because you said the first year you couldn't really remember much. Was it something that changed or...
Yeah, I'd say that the first year was really difficult. So I was really healing from the birth. It was taking a while, but from the very beginning, I think that you have this thing that develops called the mother's instinct. And even though I wasn't very connected to him from the very beginning, I knew there was something not right with him. There was just something not right. He was just more of a crier than he would never settle. I would assume that that was all my fault, but you know, he wouldn't feed properly. And then I kept getting ignored. And at 8 weeks old, my poor little boy, he ended up going blue and floppy. He choked on his own secretions and unfortunately had a respiratory arrest. So my mother and I, we had to resuscitate him at home until the paramedics arrived. My poor baby ended up in hospital, and that was the initial diagnosis. He had very severe reflux, which was undiagnosed for a long time. So for that year, then he had really bad feeding difficulties. So me and him, I mean, I think that in some ways, when I say the first year was very dark, that was the beginning of the connection between me and my son, because at that point I realized, just one, when he was in the state, how much I loved him, that I was terrified that I was going to lose him. Sorry, I still get really emotional talking
I'm
about
sorry,
this.
I'm sorry, Dr. Also, I'm trying to hold back my tears as well, because as you're talking, I have Radhika in my arms and I'm just looking at her and I'm just...
It was just, I think that was the moment where I realized, God, I love you so much that if something happened to you, I don't know what I would do. And I think it was almost a bit of an affirming situation, because up until those 8 weeks, I kept going, I'm such a failure. I'm such a bad mom. I'm so ill. I couldn't hold him without it being painful. And just everything was just, it just was awful. But then during that following year, it was almost like I thought, okay, do you know what? Nobody else listened to me. I knew what was going on with my baby. And it was almost like from then on, me and my son took the healing journey together. I was there for him. He was like suffering. He was there for me. I was suffering. And it was almost like we kind of bonded over that. And I he became the therapy that I needed.
Yeah.
So I would go to things like, I would go to baby classes and I wouldn't connect with the other mums who'd had like really nice births. They were breastfeeding fine. And I would sit there and I'd be struggling to feed my baby with reflux. And I would just kind of just about get there in one piece and feel so inadequate. I would take him to sensory classes and he just wasn't interested in some of the things that they were doing. But then I would take him outside and he was like, you know, he was so connected to nature. So he would like love looking at leaves. He had this obsession with looking at leaves. And I would then look at the leaves. And over sort of weeks going by, I would notice the colours changing of leaves. He was fascinated by the clouds. So I would sit there and like we'd lie on the grass and he'd be there and we'd watch the clouds together. And I was like, oh my God. So it was almost like he then started, it was through him that I discovered that that was actually mindfulness. I didn't know what mindfulness was at that point. But it was little things like starting to read what he was doing rather than what the expectations of everyone that was telling me what a baby should do or what the books were telling me. I had to actually connect and go, well, what does Irish want? What does Irish need? And slowly but surely, I think that that was the beginning of the making of our relationship and me having a bit more of an understanding and trusting that I had instincts and the power to be a good mum. But it was slow. It wasn't overnight. But my mum said something that was so powerful to me because I, as an academic, need books all the time to tell me what to do. So I would be walking around going, 7 p.m., he should be sleeping. 10 o'clock, oh my God, he's just gone to sleep. Now I need to give him a dream feed. And one day my mum just said, stop, like babies don't come with a manual. Read your baby. Stop reading these books. Stop listening to other people. Listen to your baby, you know, and spend that time connect. And she'd be like, look at the lines in his hands when you're really, really anxious. Just look at the lines in his hands. And, you know, when you start doing things like that, you become quite absorbed. You become really present with your baby as opposed to thinking, what's next? What's next? I need to wash. Okay, baby's sleeping. And now I need to do the laundry. Now I need to do this. And, you know, you become such a list maker that you forget to just be in that moment. So I started tapping more into the wisdom of our elders and asking them more and actually discovering that along the way, all of our elders have had very similar experiences. But I was too afraid to ask the question early on.
Well, you know, I spoke to my mom a few weeks ago about this and I just asked her, like, what was it like to have, because I have an elder brother as well. My parents moved to Gibraltar from New Delhi. So they moved there about 30, 40 years ago. And at that time, there was no WhatsApp, Skype or anything like that. They were just sending letters back and forth. And I asked my mom how she got through it because I can just call my mom any time of the day when I'm feeling down and she lifts me up and we talk about things. And she said to me, she said, Meenal, when I used to bathe you and Akhil, when she used to bathe us or take us to school, she would just cry. And I said to her, I said, do you know that you possibly had postnatal depression?
Yeah.
And she didn't know that was even a thing. She didn't know that that something like that even existed. And it's only when I spoke to her about it that she realized that. She said, Meenal, I probably did go through that. So I think now we're very lucky that we have all these things around us to help us and to stay connected to other people and to stay grounded. I think that's the difficult thing because, as you said, you feed your baby, then you're thinking, okay, between now and the next feed, I need to get this done.
Yeah.
And it becomes monotonous and that's what's exhausting. That mental exhaustion kicks in and that really affects your mental health. But I think that a lot of women go through this and they may or may not tell their partner. And I think that that's also another sort of angle of the postnatal depression that I think we also need to talk about is postnatal depression is common in men too.
Absolutely.
And it's seen in men and we never, I mean, poor men who go through 9 months with their wives and they try to deal with their cravings and their tiredness and their sickness and the baby comes and they try to help, but there's only so much that they can do. I mean, my husband made a good point yesterday. He said, Meenal, you can just take Radhi on your breast and she'll be fine. But I have to give her a bottle when you're not around and a bottle doesn't have the same sort of effect that we need to calm her down. So it takes me longer. And I was like, actually, that is true. It's not easy for men to go through this as well. But how is it for your husband to see you and Arish to some extent go through this pain?
Yeah, and you know, I actually recently did a post on this just after I had my baby, and I talked about the fact of postnatal depression in men, because in fact the statistics are 1 in 10 men will suffer from postnatal depression, and it's so under talked about in women that when it comes to men, it's even less that we talked about, because, you know, men would associate that this is their time just to kind of, they have to become the dad figure, you know, the one that goes out to work, the one that comes home to support. They kind of take on this role and they think that it will be weak of me now after everything that my wife has gone through for me to sit and talk about how bad it is for me. But actually, absolutely, men go through so much of a transition. As women, we lose our sense of identity quite a lot along the way of pregnancy. Our body changes, we are struggling with all the ups and downs of that. Then the baby comes, and the baby becomes the focus of our life and the center of attention, and dads always just get put on the back step. And so when it comes to, yeah, absolutely. Did I address this with my husband when Irish was born? No, like, my husband was working away, actually. So I was living in London at the time. When I had my baby, I just was really struggling. So after 6 weeks, I moved back up to Scotland to be near my mum and dad.
Oh, right.
Because I just wasn't coping at all down there on my own. So again, just really needed my support network. But my husband at the time was working in Newcastle. So it was really difficult. So I moved in with my mum, and my husband would come up at the weekends. But of course, bearing in mind, it wasn't until like 3 or 4 years later that my husband for the first time spoke about it. Because, of course, Irish was born, and seconds later, he was left in a room that was essentially, to be totally graphic, covered in blood. And he was just left with his brand new baby in his arms, with his wife taken off to theatre. And he was having to be told that, you know, maybe your wife won't make it. And, you know, he had to make some really difficult decisions around that time. So he never spoke about it with me for the first year or two, because obviously I was still very much healing, and I just needed, you know, I needed to the attention. And I unfortunately didn't ask him how he was doing. So a few years later, when we did have this conversation, he was like, I was terrified. I was totally traumatized by what happened, but I just had to get on with it. You know, I had to keep on doing the work, and they do that. So this time round, we had a very difficult situation, very different also, because we're both frontline doctors, and he obviously had to continue working, and because of COVID, we had to socially distance this time. So, you know, like, I just can't have any more children, because I don't do the whole birth thing very well. There's always some sort of drama around the time of birth.
Yeah.
So this time around, we had to socially distance. So in the latter parts of my pregnancy, my third trimester, when I stopped working, we had to kind of live on the opposite sides of the house. And he obviously was having no close contact with me or my son, because he was continuing to see patients. And even on the day of the birth, he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to come in, because the guidelines were changing on a minute by minute basis. But this time around, what was different was we talked. We talked about it so much. We talked about how we felt every day. We really made a conscious effort to connect about the topics. Even, you know, there's lots of hours where I would sit outside his room, because, you know, I was like, at a time where you just physically want to be close to each other.
Yeah.
You know, this time around, I think for quite a lot of couples, it's been really difficult of what to expect. And, you know, your husband was working, because he's working as a doctor. So things have been really, really tough for many of us who have had key workers in the house. But we really kept that sort of channel of communication going, of touching in how we're feeling every single day, and me being aware that he was also battling sort of trauma. I had therapy throughout the whole of this pregnancy, because I, after that panic attack and with my midwife, she referred me to a psychologist, and I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder secondary to birth trauma.
Right. And so this kicked in with this kicked in with the second pregnancy. Did this PTSD kick in with when you had Elora as well?
Yeah, this was with Elora.
Okay.
So I hadn't dealt, so on many levels, I thought I'd moved on from my birth 7 years ago, but it was only this time when I found out I was pregnant that I started getting things like flashbacks. So memories of the birth that I didn't have in my conscious brain, suddenly I was able to, like, I was just having really vivid flashbacks, really vivid dreams of being in theatre 7 years ago, of smells that were coming back, of voices that from theatre that day, because obviously, like, it's all such a blur in my mind. But I guess I've learned so much about the power of the mind through this experience, is that the subconscious memory retains so much from the past. And we focus a lot of trauma often with things like, you know, abuse or accidents or severe diagnosis. But actually birth for many, many, many women is a very traumatic procedure that you just bury. So this time around, I was having the therapy throughout just to really deal with that past trauma, but also to prepare me for this birth, because there were so many unknowns about, I was a high risk pregnancy. Mm. And then, of course, all of that went out the window, because as soon as the pandemic hit, lockdown happened, control was gone. Mm. So, you know, it was just a matter of communicating. And I think for any couples out there, the one thing I would say is that whilst one person is going through the pregnancy, it's a couple that is pregnant together.
Yeah.
And to be able to speak throughout the whole thing of whether it's not just about mum. Mum is, of course, priority, but dad's also, or partner's also, needs to be very much involved in checking into how do you feel.
Yeah.
It's all right. Oh, she's so cute. But yeah, just about checking in with partners, because their sense of identity changes. They're dealing with somebody who is changing.
Yeah.
You know, my husband will also be like, you know, we laugh sometimes. He's like, God, you're not the person I married. And I'm like, you're not the person I married.
Well, I think
it's so different.
I think it's really important to just remember that, for example, with me now, all my energy is going into my baby. It's not, I don't even have energy for myself, let alone my husband. So, you know, they say you can't pour from an empty cup. And that's very true right now. I mean, I'll be honest, I've got nothing to give to myself or anybody else at the moment.
Yeah.
And it was only yesterday I asked my husband, I was like, well, how do you actually feel when you are around the baby? I mean, what kind of connection, what kind of emotions go through you? Do you feel like you're just babysitting her? Do you feel like her father? And he said, look, to be very honest, Meenal, I'm really trying to just connect with her. And that's something I never thought about. You just like people think mothers automatically connect with their children, I guess people also think fathers do the same. And, you know, we had...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, with Irish, what happened was, because I was in ITU for a week, my husband had to be the person. And actually, this time around, he's done all the things that he remembered doing with Irish. Now, they have an amazing connection. But from the first moment that Irish was born, my husband had to do the skin-to-skin.
So, because you were rushed straight, yeah.
Yeah, so my husband, you know, for that whole week, it was skin to skin with Irish, because I wasn't there, you know. And this time round with Alora, when she was born, you know, we really missed that, because he couldn't even hold her for the first kind of few weeks because of the whole COVID situation. So it's been really interesting, because from the moment we felt it was safe to do so, again, we were just like skin to skin, just get her close to you, spend as much time, you know, like, and I think that this is it. The bond is just as important for the partners as it is for the mothers. Mm. And for us, of course, our baby is craving for our voice, is craving to be, you know, held by us all the time, because that's the only environment that they know. But the next best voice that they know is that of, you know, their other parent. And so trying to kind of enhance those connections in every way possible is so important. So, you know, with me, with Alora, yes, I'll feed her, but at every opportunity I'll be like, okay, off to dad you go, you know? Yeah. And that we really missed that in the first few weeks. Like, my husband really, like, even when with Irish, you know, he was obviously very sad, but he tried to be really brave with me. But this time around, it was a different kind of ache that I saw in his eyes, because you know, he was torn between, he has to do his work, he has to go to work, and he has to do his duty. But, you know, he was like, that's my baby girl. I just want to hold her. I just, you know, want to be close to her. Well, that's
the
thing.
You know, the pandemic has obviously created, it's been a very weird time to be pregnant. I mean, I didn't expect to be pregnant in a time like this where the whole world was changing. And just to remember as well, pandemic was one thing, but then, you know, we've seen Black Lives Matter, we've seen so many other things simmer to the surface now, and it just feels like the whole world is going through a big social revolution right now. And to keep up with that, and then also to some extent, with me at least, in my head is like, how can I be a good human in this world right now? So I had that in my head, but then also at the same time, how can I be a good mother, how can I be a good wife? So all these things going through my head on a daily basis. It was a very weird time to be pregnant. Do you think now as a GP, you're going to get more cases coming in of either postnatal depression or post-traumatic stress disorder related to Absolutely. The pandemic?
Absolutely. Yes.
And have you seen that come in already, or do you think it's still going to take some time?
So I've spoken to countless women over this whole transition period through my platform and sort of through friends that have been sort of pregnant around the time. And I think it's an interesting time because we've been on such an adrenaline rush. We've been very much on survival mode. And actually, this pandemic is showing the capacity of what us as a raw kind of innate level as human beings are. It's kind of almost been a fight for survival. It's been like, what do I need to do today? What do I need to do now to keep me and my family safe? So it's almost been like my anxiety levels were through the roof going through into hospital and everything. But all I kept thinking was, I need to get in here, I need to have my baby, I need to get her back home where it's safe, you know? So you've been in this kind of survival mode of knowing there's no other connections coming in, nobody else is coming, it's me, myself, and I. But then as restrictions have started to ease and we are starting to enter back into the world again, it's almost like there's a bit of an aftermath now happening because mums are exhausted. We have been through a very psychologically traumatizing time where we felt that our babies are unsafe potentially, or whether we were at risk of passing something on to our babies. We're now entering a world where not many people have seen our children or held them. And all these kind of, you know, senses of lost maternity time or a lost sense of support and connection. I think that over time, this is going to unfold as a bit of a PTSD of, oh my God, I can't believe what we have just been through.
Yeah.
So I do think that there is a lot of that that's going to come out. And I mean, already lots of us are experiencing it. You know, I went back to work last week and I really felt this real pang of, I had no maternity leave.
Yeah, there's a resentment, isn't there? You just feel angry, like, I didn't get what I wanted or what I expected.
Yeah, but in other ways, I don't know, I've started to kind of almost reframe it. I get days where I do feel really sad about things, like even something as simple as I took my baby to go pick up my son the other day from school. And when you have a newborn, you want to show your baby to the world. You want to, like, you want others to adore your baby and to tell you that your baby's beautiful. It's like a normal mum thing. You know, here's it's almost like that Simba moment.
Yeah.
Here's my darling.
Yeah.
I just want you to just adore and tell me I've done a great job and creating this beautiful human being.
Yeah.
And that's all been missing because it's all been over Zooms and, like, you know, FaceTimes.
Yeah.
And we were at the gates and you know, some parents came over and they were just admiring her from, you know, they were obviously distant, but it was just like, you know, somebody slipped in. That we have this tradition here in Scotland where you just slip in a silver coin into the baby's buggy as a sign of good luck. So a couple of parents had just done that. They put that at the bottom of her pram. And it was just that moment I thought, God, you know, she's missed out on all of this. She's almost 6 months old. And, you know, she's not had, like, people haven't been able to kind of see her. She's not been able to see people. And it does make me sad sometimes that, you know, you'll have the same, Radhika will do that, is that our babies just instantly have the power to make people smile, like from the soul. But because everybody's hidden behind masks and you think, oh, baby, you can't even see the full impact of what you do to people.
Yeah.
You know, like, so it's little things like that, I think, moments where you think, oh, that's just not fair. But then, as you say, these little kids have been born at a time where the world is going through such a shift. And I try to stay positive and I think, my God, your birth story is going to be one that we're going to tell over and over and over again.
Yeah.
We're going to be like, that year when you were born, the world changed.
Yeah.
But it's changing for the better. There's so many positive movements going on right now. And I just think, growing up, you know, if some of the conversations that are taking place right now happened, you know, 30 years ago when I was growing up, perhaps a lot of things, the challenges that I faced as a young Indian British growing up, you know, perhaps I wouldn't have had to go through some of those things that hopefully now our kids will be protected from. And they're being raised in a world that's kinder, that's cleaner, that's more friendlier, it's more protective of animals as well. But, you know, it's just a really positive space for these babies to be born in. So we've got to focus on the positives, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you can, and if you have the... If you don't watch the news too much, then you can. You know, the last 7-8 months have been a big sort of transformative period, I would say, for me especially, because being raised in a country like Gibraltar, I never experienced things like racism discrimination because it's a very tight-knit community. There's lots of different like pockets. You got like the Jewish community, the Muslim community, the Indian community, and there's still, despite all of that, there's a big sense of pride in being Gibraltarian. So when it's like our national day in September, we all wear our red or white shirts. We're just proud to be who we are. We never see people through their skin color or surnames. We all go to school together. No one is looking at you in a different way or a funny way. But I only started to experience that here when I came to the UK. Sorry, Dr. Poon, you probably can't take me seriously with a dummy in my hand. But but it's only when I came here I realized, you know, racism truly exists in our society. And it's not just the subtle racism I'm talking about. I'm talking about the very obvious racism that people will say to you right in your face. And I saw that as a doctor, you know, seeing patients who would say to me things like, go back to your country, I want to be seen by a white doctor, or, you know. Now, that for me has created a fear that my child is going to be raised in this environment where racism exists. And despite all the protesting that's going on, despite all the campaigning, we're still seeing things like black people are still getting shot. We are still seeing this racism seep through our society blatantly as well. And those people in power are remaining in power, and people are continuing to vote for these people to stay in power. And that scares me, that what kind of world would my child live in? And will my child face the same thing I was facing? Or will my child have that courage to fight what we're trying to fight? We're just fighting fires every day. That's all we're doing, it seems. So you seem to be very positive about it, Dr. Poonam.
Yeah, no, I am. The reason being is that like my mum and dad, you know, were immigrants who came over from India. Like my mum was married, arranged marriage at 18, and she had me when she was 19. We grew up in, you know, my granddad's like corner shop.
Yeah.
Our life was in a way that my mum and dad were like, you guys need to be changed. Like, we need you to have a different life to the one that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And racism was very much part of, like, you know, every day in the shop, I would see my granddad, my dad, like, being verbally abused. Have things thrown at us at school. I faced it. Even as a doctor, I faced it many times. You know, and I'm from Scotland. I'm born and raised here. But then what I've kind of realized is that the only way that things can change is if I do my little role in social activism and I speak up, and my kids watch me doing that. They watch that their parents are being voices for change. Because the only way the world's going to change now is not if we keep looking at those that are already in power, because for too long we have done that. I've seen my parents used to just say, and my grandfather would just say, oh, just leave it, you know, it's better to be quiet, always in fear, you know, like anytime anything can happen and they'll just send us back to India.
Yeah,
be so silly, like that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But since I've become a mum, I've kind of thought, I don't want my kids to be that. I want to change the narrative. But the only way I can do it is not if I keep trying to change those that are already in power, but it's by being in my small capacity, whatever that may be, to be a voice that can make some small change. And if my kids see that, and if I raise them with the values I truly, and that's you know, we are all based on values.
Yeah.
If they are raised with values that are all about representing truth and doing their bit, then, you know, hopefully that is the way that we're going to start seeing change happen. Now, many years ago, and not even many years ago, we see it every day, you know, racism exists. But recently in this current period, we're seeing that people are putting their foot down. They're saying no. They're saying that, you know, yes, Black Lives Matter, and this is why. And I think it's been wonderful for my 7-year-old to watch this, to learn from it. It's allowed us to speak about racism, you know, which I maybe wouldn't have done for quite a while yet, actually, in my own house. But it prompted me to say, I'm going to start the conversation with him now. I'm going to tell him why Black Lives Matter. I'm going to tell him where his heritage comes from, of what his role in society can be, because seeds are planted when they are young. And if they are already grounded when they are at a stage where they understand that they are important. My son knows at the age of 7, he knows that he matters. I was never empowered at the age of 7. I was told, you're a girl, you do what you're told, you be quiet, you respect your elders, you don't speak up. Whereas I don't do that with him. And with my daughter, I will not do that either. You have a voice, your opinion matters, you are an equal in this family.
Yeah.
What is your opinion? If you don't wish to do something, we will not do it.
I think one thing I've learned as well is that, you know, my parents, disciplined us. They were very strict with us. And it was all about telling us. And I never listened. I never listened to them because I was like, well, whatever, just in one ear, out the other sort of thing.
Yeah.
Now as a mother, I look back and I realize I'm doing a lot of things my own mother did, not in terms of disciplining Radhika, she's too young for that, but just in terms of like the way I deal with the house stuff and how I deal with my marriage. And that's all because I saw what she did, that it sunk in. And I think that's really important, that our children see what we are doing and they absorb all of that information. Because, you know, when people ask me things like, well, Mian, why are you going to Downing Street? Like, just sit at home. Like, don't, no, nothing's going to change. That's what I kept hearing. I think I had more of that than, okay, actually, Mian, go ahead. I had barely had any of that, actually, because at that time we were scared to speak up as doctors. You know, afraid of losing my job, my maternity leave, all the things were going through my head. But then I said to myself that if my daughter doesn't see that image, forget me, just generally, of a brown woman protesting or standing up for basic human rights of protection, then she will never stand up for it. So that imagery is absolutely so important.
Yeah, I got a lot of slack actually when the Baba Garba case happened.
Oh, yeah.
And I was really, I don't know, really struck a chord with me on a real deep level. But I took my son to the rallies. I took him and he helped me make the placards. And we stood there and I got a bit of slack from the elders in my family of like, what are you doing? And I was like, he needs to know that he has a voice that really matters. And I think that even now, like I suffer massive doses of imposter syndrome sometimes. And it takes me a lot to kind of step out of my comfort zone. Like you say, I'm very brave just now, but 7 years ago, I wasn't brave enough to speak this and tell the story. But every day I wake up and I think, okay, you know, like my kids give me strength because I need to change it for them. I need them to grow up confident and not hide behind things and not be afraid to speak up, because I think for far too long, we have all been too afraid to speak our truth. And, you know, I guess my experience 7 years ago was a big wake-up call, because like I very nearly didn't make it. Yeah. And, you know, we deal as doctors with life and death every day, and we appreciate life and death, you know, but when you're on that side and you literally think, gosh, in a moment, all of this could change. You then think, okay, if I've got one shot at it, what do I want to do? I want to raise really good people. And, you know, I think after this pandemic, all of us are going to realize just how strong and resilient we all are for what we have gone through.
Yeah.
For mothers that have birthed during this period, for mothers that have kind of gone through an isolating time, you know what, we are getting through it. But wherever possible, to put that hand forward and to help one another and to support one another and to speak to each other with kindness, not give each other sort of grounds to feel like they're competing or being compared to against you, because comparison is genuinely the root cause of all evil. It makes me sometimes as a mother as well doubt myself. I have to really pull myself back and say, don't compare, you are your own person. But I think where we can just be more mindful of where we are and what our role is in supporting and helping each other through this, then I think that really it is a positive path ahead.
It is. And I think now, because we've just really gone through that big blow of, well, I hope at least we've gone through that big blow of like a big wake-up call. I think now we're slowly entering that phase of reshaping society. And this is when the positive things will start coming out. This is when we'll start to see what people are capable of doing. Those who maybe weren't speaking up before are the ones who will come out now and say, okay, let's try and help. Let's try and make a positive change. And I think it's a blessing that our kids are living through this moment. Even though they're too young to understand, even when they go to school one day and they read the books and be like, oh, I was actually alive during this revolution. I was alive during this time.
Yeah.
And to be part of this is incredible.
It really is. I think even in our time, it's always been about, and the war, and remember the independence of India.
Yeah.
Whereas now we're like, okay, so we're actually all part of something that we won't really remember we went through together.
Yeah.
And I think the kids born right now have got a lot to teach us. I think that, you know, on a more spiritual level, I think that there's a lot of souls that have come into the world right now at a time where the world needs healing as well.
Yeah.
So I'm quite excited to see what all these feisty 2020
2020 kids, they've all been like a ray of sunshine we all needed. You know, to see these kids even when I was still in my early parts of my pregnancy and the pandemic was quite bad in the UK, to see the stories of women giving birth, I was like, life is coming to this earth in such a beautiful way that it's just an incredible thing to witness.
Definitely. I remember I wrote this in one of the papers, I can't remember which one for, but I'd said, if only, and this was in the darkness of right in the pits of lockdown and pandemic, I was like, I just wish every day on the news when they do the daily briefing and they tell us the daily death toll, if only every day they could tell us the daily birth toll, because it just felt like the world was disappearing every day. You were looking at these millions and millions of people who were just dying, and I was like, but at the same time, like even on the day that I went in to give birth, you know, there was about 30 babies that were born that day in the unit alone, you know. So we're just like, for goodness sake, why are we not hearing about the fact that actually there is hope, there is lots of new lives coming as well. And not that it makes it easier to accept those that have passed, but just to give some hope that, you know, it's not all doom and gloom, and to celebrate the fact that at this time there is some joy that's coming into the world also.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Dr. Poon, I can't thank you enough for having this conversation. I feel like this was my therapy as well. So, I don't know why I chose a day to do this when I had no babysitters around. And now I've ended up with Radhika on my lap, and she did cry a few times, but she's been quite well behaved.
It's been beautiful having her. I think that, you know, this is what we do, isn't it? As moms, we just work around our children, and they're very much
well. This is going back to what I was saying, that I want her to see what I'm doing, what you're doing, and this is a good start. She has to sit in these conversations right from the beginning.
Many a time where my children have to do that.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's we have to be the change in order for them to be the change tomorrow.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Poonam. And I just wanted to quickly, for our listeners, if anybody wants to follow you, what's the best way? Is it your Instagram or Twitter?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Poonam Krishnan.
Okay, so we'll stay tuned on your social media, because you've got a lot of wisdom to share, and I really urge all our listeners to follow you, especially new mums, and doctors in general. I think, you know, the work you're doing is incredible and very empowering. And I just want to say as well, like, you don't know like this positive impact you're having on people. I mean, you probably didn't even know I was following you so closely, and you were bringing a change to my life. So just keep on doing what you're doing, Dr. Poonam, because you are really helping so many people.
Oh, now you've just made me cry.
Oh, no.
Why made me cry at the end?
Oh, sorry. No, I didn't mean to do this.
So
no, it's all, we'll try to make this positive as we can. And, you know, there are days where I feel quite shit, but, you know, seeing people like yourself and so many other people on, and I understand Instagram and Twitter and all the, it's all a highlight reel. I mean, I'm sure you posted a beautiful photo of Alora and Arish, and then an hour later you could be crying on the couch. I mean, I don't know, it happens, but just to see that we're all going through the same thing, we're all on the same boat.
Absolutely. I try and keep it so real. I'll always say, here's the photo and here's what's behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, shitty days, oh my goodness, there's so many moments of every day that are just so shitty. And I resonate when you say, when your husband comes home, there's been so many times when my husband comes home, he goes, what have you done today? And I just want to be like, are you kidding?
Yeah, and all you, all, only sometimes he's coming and he said, what have you done? I was like, I've just breastfed. That's all I've done. Yeah, I've just been breastfeeding.
I've kept your child alive.
Yeah, exactly.
You've not saved as many lives as I have. Properly kept your child alive. And you are. There's so many desperate times. There's so many helpless times. So many lonely times. I have never felt more lonely.
Yeah.
Than I have done in these last few months, and couldn't see the end for whatever. But you know, I think as long as we are open and honest about the fact that it's very normal to have days like that, and it's very normal to have days where it just feels picture perfect.
And accept those days when they are bad, just accept that that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's what helps you get through to the next one.
It's not like your children sometimes.
I'm covering Radhika's ears as you say that.
Yeah, like to my Irish, my mom's like, I love you so much, but boy, do I not like you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Poonam. You can say bye to Radhika, because she's just woken up, and you can say,
beautiful, look at her.
Say bye, Radhi. She's heard the whole conversation. Let's see how much she remembers of it later. Thank you so much, Dr. Poonam. We'll stay in touch.
And thank you, dear listeners, for tuning into another episode of Mean Old's World. Thank you, Dr. Poonam, as well, for joining me. I mean, she runs a very crazy, busy schedule, and for her to fit in some time for me is really admirable. And I'm honored to have had someone like her on the show. And, you know, if there's anybody else you feel I should have on the show, anybody's stories you want to hear, then just drop me a message on Instagram. You will find me on meanolds_world. You can also drop me an email to meanolsworldpodcast@gmail.com. Please do share this podcast with your family and friends, anybody you think will benefit, or even just enjoy this show. We've got a lot more exciting things coming up over the next few weeks, and I'm really, really grateful to have you all on this journey with me. I'm very grateful that you always show up every Friday and support this crazy vision of mine. So I'll see you all next week.